Dottle.
It's Dottle Talks Tech with James DeRuvo.
Never touch another man's butt.
Online at dottlenews.com.
My guest on this week's Dottle Talks Technology is digital filmmaker and cinematographer Shane Hurlbut. Shane Hurlbut is a renowned cinematographer who has lensed 17 feature films, including Terminator Salvation, We Are Marshall, The Greatest Game Ever Played, and the highly acclaimed Act of Valor, which was shot primarily on the Canon 5D Mark II HD SLR and is the first full-length feature film released by a major studio to do so. Along with his wife Lydia, he also writes a blog at HurlbutVisuals.com to educate and inspire one filmmaker at a time. A recent fan posted that it's the go-to playbook for digital filmmakers, and Shane regularly shares a wealth of information and professional experiences with the DSLR platform, including lighting direction and behind-the-scenes tidbit. He is a passionate voice sharing the lessons learned from the full-length feature film in history to be shot entirely on the Canon 5D. Shane, welcome to Dottle Talks Technology.
Hey, how are you doing? Thank you so much, James.
Good. So, first off, I'm going to say, did you know going in that you were going to be shooting with live fire ammunition during the shooting of Act of Valor? Did you know that before you signed on the dotted line?
Yes. I did know that, Scotty Waugh and Mouse McCoy, their vision for this film was real. Keep it real. And live fire hasn't been used since the 20s. So, for us to go into this environment but you get into the movie and you hear live fire and you're like, yeah, okay, fine. But then when we say, okay, we're going to Stennis, Mississippi, and it's like, why are we going there? Well, that's a live fire range.
And that's where the SEALs train.
Exactly. And you're like, what? Because I just imagined it in a whole kind of different way, I guess. But whatever the way was, we really captured it kept everyone tense. You were on edge. And I think it reverberated through the camera and the way it kind of feels.
Well, it certainly does. I mean, I was blown away by the film, not only by how well it was shot and the story was fantastic, but you wouldn't know that it was shot on a DSLR. It really seemed to me that the image really held up in comparison to an Arri or a Panavision. It was really well shot.
No, absolutely, James. And it's funny too because everyone told me this was everyone told me this was going to be impossible. It was impossible to take a still camera and put it on a 60-foot screen. And that's when I knew I was exactly going the right way when everyone told me I couldn't do it. And I've kind of been that way my whole career. I'm very much into trying to reinvent the wheel, trying to come at something with a different lens, a different view, a different aspect. And this was really getting inside the eyes of the Navy SEAL in a way and a feel and a visceral kind of immersiveness that you've never seen before. And I think that when I've seen the movie 30 some odd times, and when it comes to the sequence where they go and extract that CIA agent, I have the same feeling I had the first time I watched it. I hunker down, I grab the armrest, and I hold on for dear life. And that's good storytelling. And I think Scotty and Mouse, we all knocked it out of the box.
Yeah, I keep coming back to the lighting conditions. I mean, you had desert, hot, bright desert light. You had the darkness of and claustrophobia of a submarine. You had that dusty area in the buildings in Mexico. Yeah, I mean, if there was any way that you could field test a camera platform for benchmarking, it's with Act of Valor.
Oh, yeah. It's like the extreme conditions we put this thing in. You know, one day you're at 115 in El Centro in a metal box that's about ready to be driven over by a huge dump truck. And then the next minute you're being immersed in humidity in Stennis with like 98 degrees and 4,000% humidity. I mean, it was extreme conditions like you never could imagine. And it really was a testament to the Canon 5D is it held up remarkably well. What I did come to grips with this camera and kind of the style that we wanted to shoot it is you never, as a cinematographer, go for lighting 360 degrees. Okay, that's usually not a good recipe for any kind of contrast or any kind of mood. Well, one thing that I wanted to do on this movie, and through painstaking experimentation and just utilizing the wonderful lightweightness of the platform, I wanted to be able to move a camera like you've never seen it move. And with that, I wanted to give you a lighting style and a presence that you felt you were with them. And it wasn't, you know, he turns this way, we have to cut because we're going to see the lighting stands, the gaffer, the grip, the flags, all that stuff. I wanted to make it so the camera had no boundaries because the seals don't have boundaries. They can move and ebb and flow wherever the mission takes them. So why harness their, you know, expression? So, you know, when we went into like that hooch that they go into where the CIA agent is held captive, you know, they are panning the camera 360 degrees. And I came up with this kind of style of contrast ratios and everything to light the areas where I need, play it dark so it had mood. And I feel it has a really wonderful, it looks very cinematic. It doesn't look like something that if you had to light 360 would feel very flat and unmotivating. And, you know, working with the production designer, we built in windows in specific areas so I could use windows to silhouette them going down the hall. But at the same point, I was like, you know, if we don't have any windows on the side, then the Navy SEAL is going to go straight. But if we put windows on the side, he's going to have to check those windows. So instead of walking just straight down a hallway, he's going to breathe. He's going to come off the wall and come back and come off the wall and come back. So that, you know, once you understood the style of how the SEALs rolled out, you started designing in production design things that would motivate him to move in the ways that you wanted from a camera perspective, which is like ridiculously cool.
Yeah, and it also made it from an audience perspective. It also made me feel like I was right there. I mean, that I was in the group, and it gave without being too phony. You know how sometimes when you look at it from you do a point of view shot of the character in a situation like that, it almost it's a point of view, but you're not really there. But in watching this, the way it was shot, I almost felt like I was in the team.
Love that. I'm glad you felt that way because that was, you know, Scotty Mouse and my vision to really put you in that place and put you in a place where you almost feel uncomfortable that you're there.
Let's talk about the specifics about what tools that you did use along with the 5D Mark. How many did you use? How many of the, because I read somewhere where, because of the fact that the 5D Mark II was relatively inexpensive, you could do shots like sending a bullet through the lens.
Oh, and, yeah, absolutely.
And things like that. So I'm just curious, how many rigs did you go through with the live fire exercise?
So we found that the secret recipe to keep up with the Navy SEALs was 15 cameras. Okay. And out of those 15 cameras, I think we probably destroyed four that were kind of, you know, we had to just call it, you know, a day. But what was so awesome is every time we destroyed them, we just sent a PA to Best Buy.
and get another one.
Yeah, and it's like, when have you ever been able to do that?
Yeah, you certainly can't. You certainly can't do it with the red Epic. That's for sure. No,
exactly, or a Airy Alexa.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. We would put them in harm's way. That was kind of the approach. We drove over the top of them. We blew them up. We sunk them under water. We aimed miniguns at them and literally blew them to pieces, but protected the CF card by putting a quarter-inch piece of steel. So, you know, the bullets would ricochet off it as the SEALs, you know, aimed at it. It was rocking.
Now dealing with the lighting gamut and the color gamut of the 5D, how did that affect your approach to lighting it? Not only in places where you had like the windows and the ambient light and the silhouettes and stuff, but just in general, lighting for how much light the 5D was able to pull in. It being a full frame camera, it was going to pull in a lot, but tell us about how you did your lighting tests and what were the shortcomings as well as the positive natures of dealing on the DSLR platform.
Well, what we found is once I started to put Panavision Primos on the camera, it took it from a Yugo to a Porsche. And the light sensitivity of the sensor went exponentially up. So if I was using a Canon L series, I was getting 10 stops of latitude. When I was shooting with the Primo Prime, I was getting 12 and a half.
Those are the lenses.
Yes.
Talking about, yeah.
Yeah. So that happened on day three, and that really started to open up our eyes. The other thing is, you know, lighting wise, I did all the day exteriors. I did lighting off of the LCD. The LCD is the greatest gauge that you can use in exposing this camera. Histograms don't work. The light meter doesn't work. None of those things apply to video. They only apply to the still platform.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm not really much of a fan of histograms.
Well, they say expose in the 1 to 4 ranges. Active Valor never got out of 2. So I tend to underexpose everything I do 2 stops, kind of across the board.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used the neutral picture style and just shot the movie based on that. And, you know, we started to light in a way that was, you know, I would, when I did day exterior or day interiors or night interiors, night exteriors, I would go off a lighting monitor. And my lighting monitor was an HP Dreamcolor, 2480 ZX, I think it is, or ZA. And that was my eyes. You know, put it on full and color spectrum, and it really kind of showcased the detail, and I would underexpose and be much more fearless in my underexposure on with that monitor, and it really got me in the pocket to make this movie look and feel, I think, like film.
Now, underexposure gives you more of a gives you more wiggle room as far as
More wiggle room because the camera has got like 7 in the under and 5 in the over. So embrace, you know, bringing the you know, if you have a hot window, embrace bringing it down because you know it's going to grab in the under. A lot of people are constantly, you know, wanting to make an even exposure, which is what that light meter does. It samples from everywhere, gives you a really bad representation of the image, and you therefore overexpose your image and you make it look like video. The 5D sensor, you really need to starve this sensor of light. And when the recipe of, you know, the cocktail, as I would call it, of Panavision Primo Primes mixed with the 5D sensor, mixed with my neutral picture style, you know, really, I think, brought about a very cinematic look and feel.
And you can do that with a full frame sensor because because if I remember correctly, the 5D Mark II is 21 megapixels.
Yeah, the megapixels on the 5D are much larger.
Right, so you can get away with it because it's got those pixels have so much room that noise isn't a factor.
Yeah, I mean it's the 5D sensor is much more filmic roll off because the pixels being bigger, it's a lot easier to get light in there. With the 7D, it's much smaller, so the megapixels are much, you know, tighter, and light is like, I'm trying to get in there. Where, you know, the 7D has much more of a, let's say, a cliff than a hill in its contrast. So I'm constantly going in there and kind of opening the 7D's contrast up to try and match the two.
Well, let's talk about how the 5D, how a DSLR shooting movies on a DSLR compares with other digital platforms.
Well, I mean, how it compares is this. I haven't really found a device that can ebb and flow and morph into any size that you want it other than a DSLR. You know, the higher end HD platforms, they're, you know, back in the moving mass business, which is a very big camera that's very long, that is incredibly heavy, and you need to go about all the ways that you've used to for decades to be able to move it, to be able to dolly it, to be able to steady cam it. All those things are still in the mix. What the DSLR enables you to do is use all those devices, but also just strip it down to the bare bones of being just a still camera and fling it around and move it. And, you know, the intimacy of the action in Active Valor is something that you've really never experienced before.
So it lets you be kinetic.
Yeah, it's right there on their shoulders in that, like that pickup truck that they're driving in. We were all in the pickup truck. We would never be able to do that with a, you know, Arri 435 or Arri Alexa, or we wouldn't be able to move the camera and do all the ways that we dealt with in there. It'd just be too big. We were going 55 miles an hour down a, you know, muddy road with trees, you know, whipping the crap out of us. I leaned out in a branch came around and poked me right in the eye, almost lost my eye. You know, it was like, it was really hectic shooting, and using a large footprint camera, Christ, one, I probably would have lost it off my shoulder, or two, it would have just made my ability to, I just couldn't get the shots. I couldn't get the perspectives that everyone really gravitates towards in this film. It would have been impossible.
And it's kind of freeing because of the relatively low cost of the platform, it's kind of freeing that you don't have to worry necessarily that you're going to destroy a $200,000 camera.
Exactly.
To get a shot.
And also when you use DSLRs, it ripples through every line of your budget exponentially because the crew size is brought down. It's much more of a filmmaker's independent corps than a massive army. You move out more as a platoon than you do as a massive, you know, regatta.
So it's kind of a metaphor for the Navy SEALs.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, we adopted their platoon aspects into our shooting platform. And that's what made us so powerful, because we could just ebb and flow and move with them because we were very small and nimble. I mean, think about taking an 8-camera package in your overhead bin space, landing in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, and walking through customs. Hey, how you doing? Hey, good. Great. And then setting up in a Vietnamese market where I'm tracking over smoking pigs and flying chickens and everything in the foreground, and we're shooting a major action sequence with 15,000 extras at our disposal, and nobody even knows we're there. Mm-hmm. That is power of the platform.
Now, realistically, though, what were some of the shortcomings of the DSLR? What did you have to do? Did you have to do anything to to other than underexposed, did you have to do anything with the images after they were shot to massage them in post or anything like that? Or were you relatively pleased with what you got?
Well, what we saw was, I mean, obviously this camera is very quirky. It's a still camera. So all the little idiosyncrasies, what we found is by day 15 or 20 out of 48 days of shooting, we finally figured out how not to show its hand. And once we did that, we our shooting became much more quicker. We became much more nimble. You know, everything really fell into place once we really figured it out and realized that, okay, all the cons of the camera, we can kind of hide. And those cons were rolling shutter, which we just weighted the camera down amazingly amount to 15 to sometimes 25 pounds and put it over the center of my shoulder and were able to roll out without a lot of rolling shutter anomalies. Any rolling shutter that we did have, we kind of corrected through CS 5.5 to be able to get rid of a lot of those, you know, issues.
Yeah, it's got a rolling shutter plug-in that enables you to compensate for that.
Exactly. The H.264 compressed codec, which I am a huge fan of, you know, when stretched, will fall apart. So I had to be very accurate in how I exposed my film, my digital film, let's say. And that was, you know, getting it very close on the day and treating it very much like ektachrome. We got an 8-bit compressed color space and, you know, it falls apart if you do too much to it. So I kind of tried to bake in the look and feel of the film in almost every location. Now, out of that, when we had all this compression, I brought in this device called Dark Energy. And Dark Energy was designed by this company called Cinefilm. And they're out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Lance Maurer and Ernie Sanchez came to me under an NDA to talk to me about this very powerful texture device. And what it does is it goes in and it strips all the H.264 compression out of all the 5D footage in some kind of an logarithm. And then it uses that same logarithm to go in and put any layer of grain that you want on top of the image. So if you're shooting night exteriors and you would normally shoot 5219, with a couple clicks of a button, he can emulate 5219 grain and bam, it is textured over the whole piece.
Sweet.
It is awesome. And I've started to use it on all my commercials now. Anything that's 5D, it's immediately gone through the cleaning process, which cleans the compression and then immediately spit out through texture. And it really makes it seamlessly cut with film. And that was kind of the secret recipe. And Jacob Rosenberg at Bandito, he was head of post-production there. He's been working very closely with Adobe. And we were on CS 5.5 before anyone even had 4. And so we were using this as a plug-in to be able to go in. They work directly with Canon. You know, when you go into a Canon, you can notice that there's sRGB and Adobe RGB. Well, that's a very powerful tool when you have Adobe working along with the same image capture sensor device. So they kind of got together with their color scientists, and once you send this footage through CS 5.5, it unlocks a color space that gives you more range. So your 8-bit is kind of transcoded into 10-bit color, and it opened up the shadows. It opened up a color range that if it looked very colorful on the H.264, it looked less colorful and gave me more shades of green, more shades of brown, more shades of everything. It just felt more rounded like film. And once I saw that, I knew I could take this thing anywhere.
So was ActiveAlloy your first experience on the DSLR? So you went through a learning curve with it as well, or had you shot before with a DSLR on a commercial or anything like that?
I had shot some webisodes for Terminator Salvation, which were kind of these alternative marketing campaign to kind of fire up the fanboys. And it was like these 2-minute cliffhangers leading up to the release of the picture. And these were all shot. It was a helmet cam scenario. And that's when I really could understand the power of the platform. Because when I put this thing on a helmet and saw how smooth it was and saw when they kind of grabbed the helmet and just talked into it and, you know, have it be blown up with explosions and having them jump and fall and spit blood out of their mouth and the immersive visceral quality that I got from these webisodes, that's what really gave me the confidence to kind of, you know, really go with this thing on Act of Valor.
So you've kind of never looked back to the conventional platforms.
No, I didn't. I had to be all in, James. I knew that if I kind of went halfway, it would not be commitment. So I literally jumped out of a plane without a parachute, and it was, you know, Scotty and Mouse's fearless nature. You know, they were originally, you know, they were stunt guys before they became directors, and that fearless ability to just say, let's go for it. You know, I've been that way my whole life. So it was like, we fit like a glove.
I guess you kind of have to be, as a filmmaker, you kind of have to be fearless. You can't go with the brake on when you're filming action films and stuff. You kind of have to go balls out and go.
Well, so, I mean, I went from shooting a $200 million action, you know, tentpole movie for Warner Brothers, Terminator Salvation, to shooting a, you know, action, realistic, with real SEALs, Act of Valor on a still camera.
And I got to tell you, it I cannot believe how well it holds up as far as imagery goes. I took my 12-year-old to go see it, and because he loves action films, and I spent half the time just marveling at, just picking it apart as I was watching it from a visual perspective, and just enjoying the filmmaking of it as opposed to hearing the story, but then also enjoying the story. I was amazed at how well it was shot, how well the SEALs acted, because they did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I thought so too. You know, there's some times where, you know, you can always kind of tell when they're off camera, when they're not speaking, you know, that's when you kind of notice that they're just, they're the idiosyncrasies and what they're doing when they're on camera but not talking really kind of gives away who they are. But they're real Navy SEALs, man. These guys are warriors.
Yeah.
And they, you know, this movie would have been such a different animal without them. And I think they made it great. I think they made it real. And that's what we wanted to do.
Yeah, I don't think you could have done this with, I don't think you could have done this film with A-list actors.
No.
It's kind of like, I remember the director of Miracle, the story of the U.S. Olympic hockey team. He said it was much easier to teach skaters how to act than it would have been to teach actors how to skate.
Yeah,
and I kind of see that kind of thing. You wouldn't have had that gritty, visceral, real world vibe going if you'd have stuck an A-list person in there, even like a Bruce Willis, who's done those kind of action films in the past. There's just something so endemic about the SEALs that you really have to sell it with SEALs in order to buy it,
yeah.
Especially when they die, and really made it for me, because I have a lot of friends in the military, and a couple of friends here in Special Forces, and so I was able to really appreciate that. Let's talk about the new platforms that have come out over the last year, like the Canon C300, the Nikon D800, the Red Scarlet. What are your thoughts on those new platforms and how they compare? Have you shot on any of them?
Yeah, I have shot on all of those. I have to say that, you know, each one of them, you know, has their amazingly unique abilities, as, you know, another arrow in the quiver. The C300 kind of opened my eyes to really clean ISOs up to like 3200, which really expands your vision as a cinematographer to using a lot more available light and kind of taking light away instead of adding it. The Scarlett, basically, kind of a downscaled red, I thought gives pretty imagery. I've, never been a fan of their sensor technology. I think it doesn't emulate film, where I think the Canon platform was designed to eliminate film. I mean, in 1976, Canon gave its engineers a mission to develop a CMOS sensor that emulated film, still film. They wanted to annihilate it by 1996. I think they were 2 years short. And that, the color space and the way the skin tones and the subtle nuances in skin tones that the Canon platform showcases is pretty extraordinary.
Now, I've read that people are saying that the Exmor sensors in the Nikon are some of the best ever built. Do you share that opinion for the new D800, or do you think that that's just more marketing?
I think the D800 is, when you, again, as a still camera, it's spectacular. As a video capture device, it's nowhere near the 5D Mark II.
Okay, so Nikon still has a ways to go on their journey through through digital video.
Yeah, they record to CF cards at 20 megabits a second. Well, the Canon 5D Mark II records at 40. So you're reducing the quality by half. It has 36 megapixels or 35 megapixels. The increasing the megapixels is the wrong way to go.
Right. It invites more noise to the party.
You invite more noise and more moiré issues because the skipping of lines is much more extreme. The higher the megapixels, the more problems.
Right.
So, that I noticed tons of more moiré issues and, just the quality out of the camera. I had to go to recording to external recording devices, which kind of, ruins the whole amazing compact nature of the DSLR platform.
I was going to say, that kind of kills the purpose.
Yeah, everyone has asked me over and over, time and time again on Active Valor, was I using a Blackmagic a Magic Lantern hack so I could record to an external device? No.
Yeah, well, Magic Lantern isn't available for the 5D, if I remember correctly.
Well, just nothing was available for the 5D, okay? This was February of 2009. The camera had just been released or not even released. It was like right on that like announcement was like November 2008. So, there were no bits and pieces and parts, not many rigs. There was nothing there. We were flying with a beta version of manual throughout the whole movie because, there was no manual upgrade. We shot all 30 frames. So we had to do a 3:2 pull down on everything because there was no 24p upgrade. I mean, this is the gestation, the infancy of this 5D. And, you asked, was it a learning curve? Well, absolutely. I mean, from day one to day 48, I compare myself to a motor. Okay. I might have been firing on a half a cylinder when I started AOV. When I ended it, I was firing on 8. When I made the last 3 minutes, I was firing on 12.
So when was the moment when you said, this is it, I'm never looking back?
Well, when you started to see all of our footage being blown up on monstrous screens at Laser Pacific and everyone saying, their jaws were on the floor, I knew that we had really, hit it out of the park. And, for everyone that says, obviously, if you take this image and you stop it, okay, on a still frame, you can go in there and literally tear this thing apart. But the minute you say roll and the thing is moving, you're not worried about that. And if, as a filmmaker, if I can put you in an environment that you've never seen before, that I can take you and immerse you in an intimacy that you've never seen before, and that I can transport you to all over the world in environments, well, that was done on a DSLR platform, which was the only way to do this movie. My job is done.
Yeah, it certainly does open up a vast array of opportunities for... Literally, the sky is the limit. You could film in space with that DSLR.
No, that's the thing. I always say that. The sky is no longer the limit. It's the stratosphere.
I just wish when I just wish I was going. I went to film school in the 80s, and I just wish that I had been born 20 years later, because I mean, when I went to school, we didn't have video cameras and computers to edit and, you know, all this stuff that enabled you to just do whatever you wanted to do. It's such an exciting time to be a filmmaker.
Oh yeah, it is. I think, you know, and Hurlbut Visuals as an entity, you know, our lines are create, innovate, and educate. There has never been a more exciting time for the filmmaking community. And we have kind of, through everything that we've done, we engineered this master cinema series. Lettuce and I got together to kind of professionalize this whole platform. And we made it at a price point that is absolutely ridiculous. That was done because I wanted to throw gasoline on the creative spirit to give people a professional platform that they said, hey, I can roll out like the pros. I can roll out like, you know, the masters have been rolling out like for decades. And that's what we have really been all about, is like taking this thing that everyone says it can't be done and saying, yes, it can.
So where do you see DSLR filmmaking going?
We're just getting warmed up, James.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is do you see – When Canon announced the 5D Mark III, I just kind of went, okay, it's got fins,
right?
You know what I mean by that? I mean it's a dot upgrade. I mean, everybody was kind of hoping that the Mark III would have been a 4K camera, but I mean,
it's coming, baby.
Do you see that? I mean, is that what I don't know if you can actually say, but is that what EOS Cinema is going to be all about? I mean, will the rumored EOS camera be the next generation 5D?
Yes, and a little yes. I mean,
because I don't view the 5D Mark III as the next generation. I honestly took a look at what they did, and I was like, okay, you just gave us a little bit more. It's kind of like the iPhone 4S.
No, it is. It's an upgrade. You know, it's they gave you a sensor that has better blacks, better detail. They gave you a sensor that has a better noise level at all the way up to like 6400 ISO. It's completely clean. You know, it has, I think it can generate time code as well. You know, there's like all these little idiosyncrasies in the 5D that they've softened the rolling shutter. They've given a better recording, you know, I think it's up to 50 megabits per second to a card. You know, it's a little, soup up under the hood to a platform, which, you know, I have a lot of 5Ds, and I'm going to go out and buy several of these things because, you know, it still is the go-to, you know, beat the crap out of aim miniguns, drive it over, blow it up, camera. It's replaced the IMO in so many ways that we make movies. And anytime you can upgrade a sensor to make and look at feel more like film, and that's where Cinema EOS is going. You know, they are coming into play in Hollywood. And everyone better hold on to their short shorts.
Well, Canon is all in, that's for sure. I mean, yeah. Looking at their professional center down in Hollywood, and even with seeing what they're doing with the C300, and and some of the things that have been shot on it. I still love the 5D Mark II. I've been a 5D Mark II fan since Vince LaFleurie did Reverie, and seeing what he was able to do with a prototype version, and the colors and the color gamut was just truly stunning. So,
I mean, what I find is inherently when you turn the 5D on and you look at that LCD screen, it immediately says cinematic.
Yeah,
immediately.
Absolutely.
It's like it's built into it. And the 7D does as well. All those DSLRs, the C300, not so much. It feels more video. It feels more like a video camera.
It's like a video camera. I honestly was like, it's an expensive video camera.
Yeah. And it's a video camera sensor as well. So all the little idiosyncrasies that go into creating this kind of still video blend is what I think makes the 5D look so cinematic.
Yeah. So what's on the horizon for Shane Hurlbut?
Well, this whole DSLR thing has really changed me as a filmmaker. I think it really has expanded my vision in I think very unique and kind of out of the box ways. So right now I'm slated to do a picture with the Bandito brothers that stars Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this is Arnold's coming out party. This is going to cement him as an action star all over again. The script is really getting there. And Scotty and Mouse, and we're all going to fire up the Bandito platoon module, going to march out to the deserts of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Las Vegas, New Mexico, and just knock your socks off.
Looking back, since you're into educating, talk to the next generation of filmmakers about where they should be headed as far as if equipment goes and what they should be focusing on.
Well, I think the next gen of filmmakers is this. Anyone that thinks they don't have to go to film school are kind of really going a wrong direction. I think film school is absolutely essential. Not so much as a filmmaker, making you a better filmmaker, but just making you a better human being. And you go and you are out on your own. You have to figure out how to live with another person. You have to cook for yourself. You have to clean for yourself. You have to, the responsibility of a credit card, a bank account, all these things that make you function in the world are brought to you very quickly and very immediate. And I think out of anything, that's what college and any university gives you. First and foremost, out of that, if you're able to reap some of the amazing benefits of all these incredible institutions that are out there, if you're able to sample even a third of it, it's already changed you as a person, and you're going to be able to be immediately infused into life. And there, the camera is really... using just the simplicity of a Canon 5D and the simplicity of a 24-105, not necessarily to something that would hold up on a 60-foot screen, but it would hold up as a wonderful training ground for you as a cinematographer, as a filmmaker, to understand composition, to understand depth of field. All these things are building blocks to using, higher-end HD cameras. So I think that is, where filmmakers need to really head. And I went to film school. I went to Emerson College. I think got one of the most amazing educations I've ever had. Coming out of there, I came from a 300-acre farm in upstate New York, and I was immediately slammed onto the pavement and urban atmosphere of what was Beacon Street. And literally there was no campus, there was no green. It was the cement and the sidewalk of Beacon Street, and the back bay was the Charles River. And that's why I went from having all this space and grass and trees and bam, and it was great. I really focused on my filmmaking. I focused on being a turning into a responsible human being, and from there, you know, this is where I've kind of, you know, come.
So you think that this new breed of filmmakers that are cutting their teeth on YouTube and Vimeo and things like that, you think that they are kind of shortchanging their journey as filmmakers by going through the School of Hard Knocks as opposed to getting in college and being with artists that are striving the same way?
Exactly. There's so much from that collaborative spirit that you go. It's just like being on a football team or a baseball team. When you get filmmakers all together, there's a collaborative energy there that you can bounce ideas. You're influenced by specific, you know, students. And it ebbs and shapes you as a human being. And I think that is so important. You playing like golf, where you're just playing, you know, against yourself, basically. Any of that kind of stuff, that's not filmmaking. Filmmaking is a team effort. Filmmaking is a professional, you know, it's like a high-tech army that has to take the hill. And it is war. It is a battle from day one of pre-production all the way to the end of post-production. So it's a team effort, and going it, you know, with the hard knocks and doing it without that wonderful community around you, you know, there's, you can obviously do that. I would not advise it.
As far as from a technology perspective, being that this is Dottle Talks Technology, if I'm a budding filmmaker, who, what's the first piece of equipment that I need to save my money for to get in order to put every dime that I throw onto the screen?
Well, I would get some used 5D Mark IIs because they're cheaper now with the release of the Mark III. I would get a nice set of used, you know, I've gone through and I've gotten a lot of old Nikon AI and AIS glass. And that, you know, holds up very well, and it's cheap. You can grab it. It's not going to break your bank. Get some NovoFlex or Photodiox, you know, adapters, and put that on your lens. And now you're out shooting with a 5D Mark II and some nice, you know, old vintage glass that's going to make that sensor sing. And then, you know, you get yourself a tricked up laptop, get some Premiere Pro loaded on there, CS 5.5, Adobe After Effects, all that stuff to be able to edit it off of. And, you know, hook onto the Master Cinema Series and get yourself a little rig that you can start to roll out with, you know, some kind of way to stabilize this camera and make it so you don't have all the rolling shutter anomalies. And you're good to go. You know, you're going to be doing that whole package under $10,000.
You know, House has been shooting with the 5D Mark II. Do you think that DSLRs are going to change the way they do television?
Well, if there's any cinematographer and director that wants to embrace it, I mean, obviously it has quirks and it's not the way that we've always worked. So you kind of have to reinvent your camera protocol. You have to reinvent how you roll out. And it really takes a visionary filmmaker to kind of embrace that and say, yes, I can, and yes, I will. That's what Scotty and Mouse and Bandito Brothers is all about. I mean, if you could take all of our commercials and our feature and stuff that we've done there, we are a DSLR, like 75% of everything we've shot is on that platform. And we're rocking out spots that six of them were on the Super Bowl. So it's like we've already proven that you can put the 5D into Super Bowl spots, and we've proven that we can put a 5D on a 100-foot screen. You know, it's I think it's just a no-brainer. It's just getting people to understand how this system works and how to not show its hand. And that's what we've really capitalized on. and been able to turn a business model into something where we can compete with the big boys and do it for half the price.
So where can we learn more about your journey as an HDSLR filmmaker?
Well, you can go to hurlbuttvisuals.com, which is our main page, and then you have the Hurl blog, which is our education side of it all. You know, I'm writing 1 to 2 articles a week on a normal basis, unless I get incredibly busy. We have an amazing post coming out on Friday that is me shooting the C300 on an El Pollo Loco commercial and using a very active camera and very minimal lighting to kind of showcase the power of that C300. And we kind of go into lighting specs of how I lit each shot, and with a ton of beautiful BTS photos. So you'll really get a feel for that. And that should be coming out this Friday. And, you know, the blog is, there's tons of gear blogs. What makes the Hurl blog different is that it's storytelling. That's what we do. 17 feature films, over 1,000 commercials and music videos. I mean, we're storytellers first, you know, gear and tech heads fifth. And, you know, the lighting is so important in HD. Lighting is king, just right along with story. So what we try to do is the full package. It's storytelling and how to convey and tell that story, tell your story with what kind of glass, what kind of tool, what kind of, you know, lighting is going to do that the best. Then we go into the whole lighting aspect and how the mood and feel should be on this, you know, film or that film, or give you lighting techniques to do it yourself, to go to Home Depot and literally buy a whole lighting package. You know, and then taking that, and at the last element, the gear, the arrows in your quiver, what you're going to use as the right tool to best tell your story. That is how our blog is different. And that what makes, I think, ours a very unique experience, because it's not just telling you what the latest and greatest is out there, because the latest and greatest is going to change tomorrow, and there's going to be something else latest and something else greatest. But story is never going to change, and lighting is never going to change. And those two things are the building blocks of you and your creative inspiration.
I also noticed you're on social media. You're on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at HurlButVisuals.
Can you that's HURLBUT visuals.
VISUALS. So it's at HurlButVisuals. And, you know, the other thing that makes our blog and our Twitter experience completely unique and different is that I answer every single response and comment personally, every single one. So you immediately are not getting a handler that is taking some kind of question and trying to format that question in my voice. It is my voice.
You sound a lot like me, that you're always wired. Drives my wife crazy.
That's good and that's bad, James. My family would like the less wiring, I have to say.
Yeah.
Lydia doesn't like the Twitter thing all the time, and I've tried to, you know, balance it. It is a huge balancing act. I mean, Lydia and I have been married 24 years. We have Kira, who's 14, Miles, who's 10. So, you know, that is where my focus needs to be most of the time, as well as being a filmmaker. But, you know, it is a daunting task to kind of do these comments and answer everything personally and try to, you know, sometimes I'm very involved, whether I'm on a vacation or I'm just slammed with work, that I'm not able to get back right away. But I do, and they are from me and from my heart.
I'm just curious. Did you tell her that you were doing live fire ammo, or did you wait until after the movie was shot?
No, she knew going in immediately once I said, Lydia, this is that section of the movie where we're going to be doing live fire. And she's like, she just had that sigh and the roll of the eyes that, okay, here goes my husband once again jumping out of planes without a parachute.
So she's used to
Oh my God. We've known each other since we were 3 years old, been dating since ninth grade.
Oh,
So
wow.
there's a history there that comes along that not very many relationships capture.
Would you say this might actually be the second going golden age of filmmaking?
Yeah, I do, James. I mean, I've never been ex so excited as a filmmaker for the endless possibilities and where technology is really ramping up. We saw film as like the ultimate capture device, and I still see it as that. But I'm telling you, the technology that Panavision is cooking up and Arri is cooking up, we're on the cusp of greatness in a way that is really going to just expand your creativity. And it makes it so immediate as well. Never before have I been, and this goes out to the film students, never before have you been able to shoot something and put it into your computer, immediately edit it, see how it feels, the look, color influences, what you can do. It's so immediate. It's so right there. And that is, I think, the best learning platform possible. Once you get college and under your belt of being a responsible human being, go out there, grab that DSLR or whatever, sings to you and says is your capture device for your creativity, and you go out there and you just try everything and you fail and fail and get back up and fail and get back up and fail. I mean, I said on Act of Valor, every morning was like waking up, getting hit in the head with a shovel, punched in the face, and buried alive. Because, it's a learning curve, and you only learn by failing. And you got to kind of just throw it out there and know that failing is only going to make you better as a filmmaker and as a human being.
Well, I guess we'll leave it at that. My guest has been Shane Hurlbut, ASC, cinematographer and trailblazer who's breaking new ground with Canon HDSLRs and digital filmmaking. Shane, thank you very much for joining us on Dottle Talks Technology.
Oh, thank you so much, James. It was an absolute pleasure. Take care.
You've been listening to Dottle Talks Tech. For more information, visit our website at www.news.dottleme.com. Got a question or comment? There's several ways to get a hold of us. You can drop us a line at james@dottleme.com or send a tweet to us at @dottleme. You can like us on Facebook and also subscribe and leave us feedback on iTunes. Dottle Talks Tech is a podcast from Dottle News, copyright 2012. Thanks for listening.